Welcome to the Hump Day Podcast. My name is Pastor Kevin Robertson. It is December 28th, right after Christmas. So hopefully you guys had a great Christmas and the last podcast of the year. Today I'm going to be interviewing Vince Rocchio. And he's been part of our church. How long have you been part of our church?
3 years.
3 years. Okay. Now the reason I want to introduce Vince is because I want to focus on brokenness within the church or hurt within the church, and then what happens, how we can use our hurts to really make a big difference in our future, big difference in our community, and even a big difference in the United States. Now we're about 3 weeks, 3 weeks I guess, 4 weeks away from the president-elect Trump becoming the president of the United States. So first, Vince, tell me about when you received Christ, your childhood, how did you get to know Jesus in your life?
Right. So thank you, Pastor, for the invitation. And basically, when I think I was about 8 years old when I was living in West LA.
Okay.
And our neighbors, parents' neighbors, invited us to go to church. You know, it's a Nazarene church.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So I was from a Nazarene.
There you go.
My dad was a Nazarene pastor.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Because when we were told the Nazarene night at Disneyland back in a long time,
yeah,
the kids were called Nasty Beans.
Oh, wow.
Because they would make out in the bus. Wow. So I didn't know you were from the Nazarene church.
Yeah.
Okay.
I started to go there, you know, every Sunday because my parents needed somebody to take care of us,
right,
my brother and I. So yeah, our neighbor said, let me take them to church. So we started going to church. And I was like, okay, you know, it's interesting. Okay. But it was interesting because it really marked my life because we were 8 and 9 years old.
Okay.
And we didn't know anybody, but once we got there, people were very friendly. And I clearly remember, like, the pastor, Alberto Darayan was his name.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very enthusiastic, always, you know, preaching.
Very Pentecostal.
Yeah. And then his wife was very exciting. She was really fun. She was the one playing the piano.
Mm-hmm.
So she would play the acoustic piano throughout the songs. And so, you know, all these little hymns, mm-hmm, all these, you know, and so that was every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the worship, we'd go to the, you know, Sunday class and made friends there.
Right.
So that was, we did that for about a year.
Okay.
And it was interesting because our neighbor, who used to take us, she gave us these small little kids blue, like colored Bibles.
Mm-hmm.
And very detailed, and I still treasure them because that's when I was, you know, we were 8 and 9 years old.
Yeah.
So we had our little Bibles, we'd go. But one thing, you know, like every kid, we get distracted, or like every Sunday we'd go to church and, you know, the worship, during the worship, it was fun.
Right.
But then as soon as the preaching would start, like, you know, 10 minutes in, either my brother and I, we were sleeping, you know. We'd be like drooling, like, you know, and so it was, that was kind of like what would happen. And then
right,
they wake us up and go to class,
yeah,
and that was fun, you know, the class.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it started. I think
okay,
that's where it
so
started.
So you had a positive church experience as
yeah,
a childhood. And I'm assuming that's where you accepted Christ in your life and decided to follow
him. Yeah.
Now, you're really musically inclined, too.
Right.
So when did you learn to start playing? You play the guitar, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
So when did you start learning that?
I was about maybe probably 12
mm-hmm,
or 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I started because it's a couple of things. Like I love music because of my grandfather.
Right.
So in Mexico, my grandfather was the musician, the town's musician.
Okay.
And when he was young, you know, the town paid his education for like music.
Really?
The contract was, you know, we'll pay your schooling for music,
mm-hmm,
but you have to teach the kids in this town for 20 years. So he did it. So he taught for 20 years music.
Wow.
So, girl, you know, knowing that story, knowing where that comes from, I wanted to be close to my grandfather in a musical way.
Okay.
So at 13, my brother started taking music lessons, and I started, like, you know, borrowing his books.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started, and then eventually, like, in school and self-taught. So it was a mixture of both.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. So, I don't know, I've never asked you before, but when you were really involved in church, and you're very family-oriented, I know that, did you feel some kind of calling in the ministry when you were young? Like,
Yeah, there was a time where after our 1 year at the Nazarene Church that we didn't go as often anymore. Mm. But when I was about 16, 17, I come from a traditional like Catholic family upbringing.
Right.
But I discovered some interesting things later on because my mom was trying to make me to go to a Sunday school and get the, all these other, confirmation and stuff.
More so Catholic.
Yeah. But to me, it wasn't fulfilling. Okay. I would go and I felt like I just didn't learn anything.
Okay.
And I tend to be kind of curious about things. Right. So I was like, well, I'm not learning anything. So right. I kind of stopped going. And the people at the church, no disrespect to them, they would call my house and be like, where is he? Like, we haven't seen him, in the last couple of meetings. I just didn't want to go. I just didn't feel fulfilled.
Okay.
And then eventually, a friend invited me to her church.
Mm-hmm.
So she said,
Was this a Nazarene church?
No. Okay. This was a Methodist, yeah.
Okay.
I was 16 then,
mm-hmm.
and it was interesting because she said, look, I have this CD, listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay. And I love all types of music.
Uh-huh.
So I took the CD and then I, went home, played it, and I fell in love with every single song in there. And it was a Christian rock CD.
Okay.
Right. So it combined this whole rock fun music with Christian messages.
Yeah.
And I was like, what better than positive music with beautiful arrangements?
Right.
So I fell in love. I would listen to it every night, mm-hmm. all day. And that basically drew me in.
What was the name of the CD?
It's a Spanish CD, Rojo.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I would listen to it. And then my friend says, why don't you come to church and, see if you like it? I was like, okay. So I came once. I went to the church. It was a rainy day.
Okay.
So I had no idea where it was. I kind of got lost. And then I get there and I see her performing. She was singing, which was like, oh, that's really cool. Mm-hmm. She's singing in the group.
Mm-hmm.
But that CD really, I always say the story, but that CD really changed my life because of the music in there and the lyrics, the words in there.
Yeah.
It was just like the most beautiful thing. And that basically kept me there.
Right.
And that was it. And that's when it started. That's when I was 17 by then. And I never went back, as they say. Yeah.
So after you graduated from high school, you started going to college, mm-hmm. and what college did you go to?
So after high school, I went to Santa Monica College for mm-hmm. a little bit, and then I transferred out.
Okay.
Uh-huh. But before that, actually, after high school, I had gone to UC Santa Cruz. So, because I was accepted to certain universities.
I love Santa Cruz.
Yeah. And so I was accepted to certain universities. I did a program at UC Santa Cruz for 5 weeks.
Wow.
And it was beautiful. I mean, you wake up and it's every day is like camp.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. The woods and it's just, I love it. It's like
Santa
my second
Cruz is
home.
Gorgeous. In fact, nobody really cares listening to this podcast. But what I'm about to say is that the beach boardwalk is the first roller coaster I ever ridden.
Oh.
Big difference.
Yeah.
I was 11 years old, scared to death. I thought that was the biggest roller coaster on the planet. And it still exists.
Yeah.
It still exists.
Yeah, I love it. Like, I used to go. We used to go every weekend to the boardwalk. I would love it, because it was became my second home.
Yeah, of course. Because we lived in San Jose.
Oh.
So we would drive across the mountains to the beach and boardwalk. So you were still involved in church.
Yeah. After I came back from Santa Cruz and Santa Monica, I still kept going to church.
Okay.
I was going to
and
church.
Then you began a relationship with Marcella?
No, that happened later on. But so as I'm going to SMC, I'm attending this Methodist church, and I just became, again, very, the music. It was the music that was so exciting to me.
Yeah.
So a lot of, church friends, these kids, we were all kids, mm-hmm. we started just playing together because we loved it so much. We loved, this modern music,
mm-hmm.
But we also loved the oldies, you know. And we would just stay playing after church. Every service after church, we would play there for 3 hours, you know. And it was just so fun because we all loved the music. So it was like this for years. And then we started performing. And we used to go to different churches to perform. And I was very lucky because some of these kids, musicians and myself, you know, they're very talented. So I learned so much. That we kind of got this little group together and we started performing out in different churches. And then all these other churches, we go to perform to their youth groups. And the kids would be like, oh my God, you guys actually do know how to play. It's like, yeah, you know. But yeah, so even my best friend there, Danny, he started playing when he was 3-4 years old. So by the time he was 13 or 14, he was a genius in music. And we played together for about 10 years. So it was just really nice. So just, I loved music. I loved going out. I loved connecting and meeting people. And I just loved being in that environment. And they would ask me, they would be like, why don't you go out and perform in Hollywood or these kinds of things? Because I was approached by friends, you know, like, go play in Hollywood, go play this and that. But I used to tell them, like, no, I don't do it for that. Like, I love the music and I love this so much. This is the best place to be playing music because you're playing music for something greater than yourself, you know. Outside, you play because you want to be seen, you want to be popular, you want people to ask your name and your autograph. But here, you're playing for something that means so much more, you know. And, you know, if you want recognition, go ahead and do that. But if you want, you know, salvation, or if you want a healthy way of living, then this is where you want to be. And that's kind of what kept me there for so many years.
Well, that's cool. So then you got involved in the church here on the west side. Now, were you involved in the worship team there too?
So
playing the worship team. And then you became part of the leadership team as well. So you have all these positive experiences now in playing exciting. You're part of this worship team of this church, and it's Spanish speaking of church. And so things started changing a little, because I noticed a lot of people like yourself, like when we first get so excited about the ministry and you get excited about working with the Lord, playing with the Lord, or for me, I was a youth pastor when I first started, then all of a sudden you notice a difference in church. Sometimes you question, you're not sure at the beginning, you're going, this is not right. Something's not right here. So lead up to your experience, you're in leadership for the church, and then all of a sudden something's happening that you're not sure of, that... Because you have a deep sense of truth in your life. And I noticed that about you, that you're on this journey to seek righteousness, peace. I mean, the fruits of the Spirit. But tell us, at the beginning, what was going on within the church then?
So at first, I was investing a lot of my time with the you know, this youth group. We had this youth band we would be playing. And that was a lot of fun. But then as we were growing older, we started to, you know, get involved with the worship band. And so when I joined the worship band, the dynamics were different. Because people wanted to do certain things this way, and somebody else wanted to do certain things this way. So everybody was pulling in a different direction. So that was my first time that I saw, like, oh, it's not as fun as, like, when it's just us youth, like, playing for fun and because we love it. So I started seeing
a power struggle.
Power struggle in the worship band. So I was like, okay, it was fun when everybody kind of forgot about power, but it wasn't when people remembered, oh, I want this or I want that. So I was like, okay. So we did that for a couple of years. But then, and then eventually I transitioned into more of a leadership, like, within the church, on the I guess you can say, like, the staff, because I just wanted something better, you know, not only for myself but for, like, the youth or for the adults. And I'm very lucky because, you know, I'm you know, coming from a Latino background, it's, you know, there's a lot of I guess a lack of education. And I'm very lucky because I've done all my schooling, you know. I'm okay. And
graduated from college. When did you graduate with?
I have a BA in economics and a BA in political science.
So you're very political. interested in politics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're not a dummy.
No.
So you're highly educated. So now you're in this church. Okay, go ahead.
So I become part of the staff, I start seeing that there's a lot of issues, and kind of the same power struggle, okay. You know, between people, mm-hmm. different points of view. And my goal has always been to reach the middle. You know, I've always seen things as you don't want to be on extremes because right. extremes make things not work well,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever extreme it is. So I always try to find, you know, the best of both worlds and compromise,
right.
you know, to kind of get the best solution of everything, you know.
Yeah.
But when you see things that are, there's no compromise and nobody's willing to compromise, I think that puts everything in jeopardy, you know. I think it puts the growth of a church in jeopardy. It puts a lot of things in jeopardy.
Well, it actually you know? Puts a jeopardy in a marriage. I mean, it's just a lot of
exactly.
issues. So it's not just a church thing or a company thing. It's a relational thing.
Right.
That if you don't compromise, because that's one of the healthy things about marriage or any relationship is compromising.
Yeah.
So I
learned that,
yeah.
and you know, I was the young one out of everybody in there.
Yeah.
You know, I was like what 20 something, and everybody was like 40 or 50.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was the only young one in there.
Okay.
And but I thought that I brought a different perspective. You know,
which you did.
And so that would happen, and then the meetings would happen. But then, you know, there were changes going in church with, you know, pastor changes and all these
mm-hmm.
things. So that, again, brought up the worth in people in a way because
right.
everybody has their own interests or everybody sees their own way.
Agenda.
And I started noticing people I think people should prioritize the health of the church, you
mm-hmm.
know, and kind of put these very egotistical one-way you know, ways of seeing the church,
right.
you know, so that's what happened. Yeah, so I started kind of losing, you know, you lose that innocence of like everything is going to be nice,
yeah.
you know, and
it's
and,
just we're
yeah.
kumbaya, we're a family,
yeah,
and this is how we work. And just like any dysfunctional marriage or dysfunctional family, there's dysfunction in the church. All churches, I believe, have some sort of dysfunction in them,
yeah,
you know, we all do, including my church. So therefore, you started saying, okay, wait, we need to be unified together. We need to bring this together. And you would just assume, everyone would say, Vince, you're absolutely right.
Right. But the reality is different.
Okay.
Right?
And what happened in the reality?
Well, there was a time where, you know, I was assigned a task. It was very simple, like, you know, to try to, you know, see where expenses and certain things were,
right.
were going. And I noticed certain things that it kind of bothered me because, you know, I for whatever reason, maybe the way that my life has been, that I always try to find what's best, you know, not for myself, but for at least as many people as possible.
Yeah.
And in that situation, there was an issue where basically, you know, I was asked to do a report, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
It you know, highlighted a lot of things within the church.
Financial
okay. stuff and observations,
yeah.
Which is very clear. I was trying to be as objective as I could.
Right.
It was written up. It was, you know, it was submitted as
mm-hmm.
requested. The problem was it was submitted with, you know, it was requested and submitted wasn't liked.
Okay.
So that document wasn't liked. And some, you know, with all due respect, and
right.
I don't want to name the names,
no.
you know, but yeah, the you know, leadership, the pastor, you
okay.
know, wasn't okay with it, even though it was basically this is your church, like these are the demographics
yeah.
of your church,
right.
So I think it's important to know who the church is,
right.
you know, so that we can kind of create programs around it or provide
right.
services or any
right.
kind of outreach that we need.
So you had a choice. Like the pastor said, look, he was bumping heads with you. So you
right.
had a choice in your head to say, you know what, I need to submit to the authority and whatever he's doing, I just need to submit to it. Or I can step down. Or I can sit there and say, challenge this. This is wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the three options. So you decided not to take the easy one.
Right.
Or the easy two. You
right.
decided to say, this is wrong.
Right. And it was simple because I was asked to kind of get, you know, see what could be done better, okay, what the demographics right. were. I did it. I submitted the report. It wasn't liked.
Yeah.
And then I either, you know, basically tried to ignore it, that's the reality, or else.
Yeah.
And so there was a point where I felt that, you know, I would do whatever it took to make it work.
Right.
So I was willing to just to work with it, you know, to work with whoever was willing to do that. But the problem was that there were so many issues that already had built within the church that it just didn't make sense then, because there was a lot of, how can you say it? They were asking for a little bit too many, I would say, unjustified or unsolicited tithes requests. Okay. Too many of them, too often.
Okay.
And, you know, based on, like, our church demographics, not a lot of people make a lot of money,
right.
you know?
Right.
These are people that are working in, you know, in like, domestic workers.
Right.
They're day laborers.
Mostly minimum wage.
Yes. So a lot of them are mostly minimum wage.
So asking a lot more money
exactly.
from them, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And
so what happened, you got in a conflict where, to the point, they said, Vince, and I don't know if they did it in a nice way, but it's time for you to leave.
Yeah, so exactly. So when I kind of, you know, made the point that the demographics of the church, you know, don't really justify the need to ask, you know, for too much so soon every week. Okay. It just made no sense because of the economics.
Right.
Then, yeah, I was obviously looked at the not in a good way. And so what happened was that one day, I think a couple of weeks after, I get to church with Maricela, right. my girlfriend. And so we're called into the office. And I was like, okay. So we go to the office. And I had a feeling, I was like, there's something wrong. Because, I mean, we just got here and they're asking us
right.
to the office. So we go to the office. And I walk into the office, and there's a brother sitting there, and then there's a pastor, and then there's a pastor's assistant.
Okay.
And I'm like,
so
okay.
you knew this wasn't good.
Yeah.
You know, you just you kind of look in the room and go, okay.
I was like, this is odd.
Another level.
Right.
Yeah.
This is odd. So we sit there, and they shut the door, and it's them three, and it's Maricela and I. And so the pastor says, you know, Vince, we're letting you go. Here's a letter. He basically fired me in a letter.
Okay.
So he had these two envelopes. He puts them on the desk, and he says, you two are gone from this church.
Exactly.
Basically, that was it.
So one letter for you,
one letter
for your girlfriend.
Yeah. And so,
she didn't have anything to do with it, did
no.
she?
She was helping with kitchen and like the food stuff.
Okay.
And so he sits there, he gives us these letters in an envelope, right?
Okay.
And he puts them there. And then he says, that's it, you guys have to go and whatever. And I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew, I was like, you know, surprised, a bit shocked, because, you know, we're just, you know, we're going to church, and then
right.
all of a sudden we're seeing those documents.
Right. So
but,
did you guys leave the church right then? I mean,
yeah, so basically it was like, you're fired, basically, right?
Okay.
So he hands these letters, which I actually declined to accept.
Okay.
So I left those letters in the desk,
right.
which he, to this day, he has in his power, like in his
okay.
desk, you know? So I declined to accept those letters because it was very clear that, you know, having highlighted the economics of our membership, you know, which is, again, day laborers,
yeah,
domestic workers,
right.
babysitters,
yeah.
you know, it doesn't justify asking them for twice or three times the money that they can't even bring for themselves to pay the rent.
Right. right.
So if, you know, obviously that wasn't liked.
Okay.
So they handed us these letters, and that was it. We had to leave
right.
that moment right there.
Yeah. So this is where, for you, Vince, where the compassion for the unspoken is developing.
Yeah.
Basically, you're defending a group of people that are quiet, that are kind of following the shepherd, and you're saying, look, you're putting too much pressure
right.
on these people. there's no way they can do it. They'll try to do it, but this is just not right. So right. This is where you're realizing I'm standing up for what's going on, for the unjust.
Yeah.
But yet now I'm getting kicked out.
Yeah.
Of doing this so unjust. So basically, that was the last time you set foot in the church.
Yeah, that was it.
So let me say, on the way home, mm-hmm. in the car with Marcella, what was going on? Were you just angry at all get out, or were you just hurt? I mean, your whole bubble of church had to be just shaken to the core.
Yeah, it was interesting because in that moment, I was just like, okay. You know, like, okay. It was a bit of a numb feeling. Okay. Like, you're kind of just thinking about it. But I've gone through so much, and I've seen so much that, you know, by then, you kind of just feel a bit unfazed in my situation. Like, I was like, well, okay, there we go. You know, you kind of like, there we go. It's like, you know, when you try to do things right, for whatever reason, you know, sometimes you get, you know, pulled down or dragged down, right?
Okay.
I guess some people are fine with doing things wrong, or fine with doing things behind people's back, or something like that, you know?
So you found this church, the church you're going to now. Right. That was 3 years ago. Now, that's interesting to have that experience you had and then walk into a brand new church mm-hmm. that doesn't know you, that is a reluctancy to even get involved in a church. Is there, like, with you and Marcella, just go, you know what, let's just sit in the pew. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to get to know the pastor. I don't want to get to know anybody. Did that cross your mind, or did you just...
Yeah, initially it did. So with this church, since it's close to the previous church, there were times that I would come in and walk in. I walked in here a couple times before, but just to check it out. So my friend would actually, he brought me here once or twice.
Okay.
So I was like, hey, this is cool. And then I came, before that issue happened, I think I walked in here like maybe a couple of months before, and I was in service, so I liked it, you know. Yeah. So I always had that in the back of my mind, you know. It's like, oh, that church.
You got the backup.
Yeah, it's like that's I like the church, and never knowing that I was going to face an issue where I get kicked out, church, right? Yeah. So I was like, well, there's a church right there, you know.
Yeah.
And also the language thing. I speak Spanish too,
right?
But I think in both, you know. So I deal with both, but. For whatever reason, I do focus clearly sometimes more on English, you know. I love both. They're both the same.
So it's never affected you spiritually. Your experience at the previous church never messed you up spiritually.
So when we transitioned to this church, there was a reluctance because you're still carrying that burden of what happened.
Yeah.
So we came here. And I know, personally, I didn't want to get involved for the first year.
Yeah.
I said I want to take a year off.
Right.
Which I did.
Which you did. In fact, it was more than a year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But then once the year went by, I loved the musicians here. Right. They're amazing.
Yeah.
So that music, again, started to, like, wanted me to do something or to contribute.
Yeah.
And so I know I actually before I would talk to Brooke every once in a while. Mm. So it was always nice to see Brooke, you know, there doing music and Angela and all of them. It was inspiring to me because they're so good.
They are good.
They're incredible. They're
very good.
So that kind of motivated me. I was like, I want to play with them. Like, I want to play.
So you have. You've been part of our worship team in the last 2 years, off and on.
Oh, yeah. I've been on and off, you know, about a year and a half playing and stuff. And I enjoy it. Whenever I get a chance to perform, I love it. It's just exciting. It's fun.
Right.
And I go back to the principle of earlier years where it's more than your, it's not about you. It's about something greater.
Yeah. So now your argument, I wouldn't say your argument, now your passion for the church was to really defend the ones that are quiet, the ones that don't have a voice. But now you brought it to a whole nother level. Now, I'm not saying within the church, but I'm friends with you on Facebook, and I notice you have really got crazy and some, not crazy, but very boisterous about a group of people that don't have a voice.
Right.
And ever since Donald Trump was elected, and you're really fascinated in the DACA.
Yeah.
The DACA program. Mm-hmm. Why is it so close to your heart, and what are you doing? Because I see on Facebook you're at Washington D.C. You're in front of the White House.
Yeah,
you're involved in all these political movements, and so why is it important for you to be involved in them as a Christian?
Right. So, you know, again, it's you've mentioned before. It's this sense of justice. Yeah. You know, I think. I have my heroes are, you know, obviously I have musician heroes, but then I have heroes that are even greater. Right. In my case, one of my biggest heroes, and I've always said it openly to many people, is Jesus.
Right.
I mean, he's like the biggest hero that I have.
Yeah.
You know, the way he would reach out to those who were in need, the way he would, you know, communicate his ideas, his thoughts, the way he would teach. I mean, what is the biggest teaching and teachers we have? I can't think of anything bigger, right? Yeah. So I've always tried to do that in my case, you know, to try to see, you know, those that cannot speak for themselves, you know, those that you know need a hand, you know, but you know people might see them pass them by and not care, you know. So in terms of the political things is so DACA basically DACA is a program that was initiated 4 years ago. Okay. So Obama came out on June 15th, 2012, and he signed an order which basically said that kids that were brought to the U.S., you know, illegally or undocumented, were going to be given a chance to actually, you know, to work, to study, and to be part of American society legally.
Okay, in 2012.
12.
And that And that's part of, that's you too, right?
Right.
So when did you come to the United States?
So I came to the U.S. when I was 7 years old.
Okay. Not by choice. You were brought over here.
Basically.
By 7 years old.
Yeah.
And so you grew up in the United States, went through junior high, high school, went to college.
Yeah.
And then 2012 happened and you go, okay, this is good.
Yeah.
This is good. And this is how you became educated.
Yeah.
And finish your degree and all this stuff. So what is going on in the big picture of the political realm now?
So 4 years ago, the program started,
and
750,000 of us were given work permits, and we have jobs, and we're going to school. And there's kids that are now going to medical school, graduate school. Some of them are engineers. You know, I'm on the business economics end of things, right? So we're trying to do as much as we can because in our eyes, this is our country. Like, we don't know anything else.
Yeah, you
know?
I mean, you were 7 years old.
Yeah.
There's very few memories before seven.
You send us somewhere else and we're like, what? Like, you know, it's like, this is us.
Yeah.
We are the American experience. This is our experience. So that happened. But everything changed almost a month ago.
Okay.
Or so.
In November.
A month and a half ago.
Yeah.
Because, you know, once Donald Trump was elected.
Right.
So Donald Trump, you know, during his campaign, he comes out and he says, you know, Mexicans are rapists. Mexicans are drug dealers and criminals. And I'm sitting there like, okay, that's not good, right? And then when the election happened,
because you took it personally.
Oh, yeah.
Because basically,
of course.
He's talking about you.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying you're a rapist. And then he says flippantly, and there's some good people.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Know, no one held on to that statement.
Exactly.
Basically, he put you all in one category. Mm-hmm.
He basically put everybody in one category. You know, but me, even when he said Mexican, you know, it wasn't, you know, Mexican to me is like, well, you know, I think that was an attack not only on Mexicans, but it was an attack on all minorities and a lot of other people that are not like him.
Yeah.
You know? So that wasn't good. So the night, it was interesting because the night before the election, I knew what was potentially could happen. I knew that he potentially could win.
Did you really think that?
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea.
Because of the stuff that I was seeing. Many things that I noticed that were happening during the campaign and with friends and people around.
Yeah.
So I started noticing and I did tell people, I was like, you know what? This can actually happen.
Okay.
Somebody like him could actually win. And so the night before was one of the worst nights I've ever had, actually, before the election.
The night before.
Because I'm a DACA beneficiary, so right. I have this permit. I have the right to legally work and everything.
Right.
So the night before, I'm like, oh my God, he can actually win. So I started getting nervous on Monday night. I started getting nervous. Started thinking about things. I'm like, oh my God, this is not good. Based on things that I was seeing, this is not good.
Yeah.
So then I went to sleep around 2 in the morning Monday, which is now Tuesday.
Right.
And then I woke up at 6:30. And I was so nervous. I actually got up and went for a morning run. Came back. I was still nervous. I went to work. And I was still nervous. The election was going on. I get home following the election, and there was a moment early on that I noticed that he was going to take the lead on everything. And I was like, oh no, this is not good.
Right.
The reason that I was very worried and very stressed out was because he vowed to end the program that I benefit from.
Right.
750,000 of us that are professionals and students, he threatened to cut us off and to eliminate the program.
Right.
So I'm there, and now the election's going, his numbers are getting better, and I am not feeling good.
Right.
I'm nervous. I'm thinking, this is it.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going to be done. Like, we won't be able to
work. And done for you, it's not just done, it's being deported.
Oh, right. So, yeah, he vowed to end the program, which means, you know, every single one of you will get deported, right? So that was, he vowed to do that.
Right.
So, you know, people like me, you know, I'm on business economics. There's people that are in medical school.
Right.
I have a friend who actually just left in August to law school.
Right.
So he's in DePaul University Law School.
Okay.
People that are doing, we're trying to do as much
They're
as
making
we can.
A difference.
We're making a difference, right? But this rhetoric of hate, you know, he was a good salesman. He sold it to people, and he told, you know, certain people are racist and rapists and criminals.
Yeah.
I mean, really? Like, how are we that?
Yeah.
My friend in law school isn't that.
I know, but do you think that Donald Trump was speaking to a silent majority?
Oh, yeah.
Feel this way
about
Hispanic people? Yeah. That, yes, you're right. And basically, you know, it's almost like Donald Trump, and I hear this a lot, he just opened the cap or the lid to racism, and now it can just flow right out.
Yeah, which is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that happened. So I was very nervous. And then the unexpected happened. He was announced as president.
Right.
Right. And now that night, it was very tough, not only for me, but for 750,000 of us.
Right.
And I felt this anger, very frustrated, because I've done everything the government has asked me to do, right? We've done everything the government has asked us to do. So we get our permits, we have to be
doing. You've done everything legally.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we've done everything the government has asked us, and now here he is saying, "Well, we take it back.
Yeah.
We don't want you here." I'm like, "Really? We've done everything you guys, the government has asked us to do."
Right. This is 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's basically you're doing everything the government said for 4 years.
Yes.
And then, in a sense, it's, okay, I'm changing everything.
It's the worst feeling in the world to have somebody, you know, say, you know what? We're just going to not do it anymore. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
I mean, these are people's lives.
Right.
You know, these are people's lives.
And I've noticed something about you, Vince, that instead of going, okay, it's over, and just I'm going to try to be quiet, you decided to really be part of a movement politically to really get your voice heard.
Yeah.
Now, tell us about that, because most people would just go, okay, I just got to keep quiet and not say anything, because if I'm way up announcing something or protest, then I'm going to be stereotyped negatively.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting, because in this situation, like, you're basically, your future is at stake.
Yeah.
So that happened Tuesday. I was feeling terrible Wednesday. Thursday, I was devastated.
Yeah.
And I would turn on the TV and I would see protests, you know, and I was like, well, I don't like, you know, protests, because it can get violent and stuff.
Right.
But I felt that I needed to voice my frustration. So I participated in a protest in downtown LA, because I just felt I needed to be heard.
Right.
You know, we're not what, you know, somebody has said we are.
Yeah.
We're not.
Right.
And unless people hear these stories, you won't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I participated in protests and got involved with certain groups. And eventually I was interviewed for certain, you know, stations and whatnot to share my story.
Okay.
And I've done that.
And
that
takes guts.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, so you went on the news.
Yeah.
What news station?
So it was KPCC ran my story.
Okay.
And then they aired it on NPR, National Public Radio.
Oh, good.
Which,
right.
Yeah.
So now it's all a little
right,
funny.
Exactly. So okay. it got
heard. This is my story. Okay.
So they put the story out there, and then also We Are Me Too, who's like a media company in Santa Monica, they took my story and that of other people like me,
mm-hmm.
and they shared it on social media and their website.
Right.
So they have like so many followers. I mean, it spread so much that I started getting a lot of requests from other people to connect. And I love connecting with people.
Right.
So I've connected with other people in all kinds of, I mean, all places.
Okay.
So My whole thing is like, you know, I have to voice this frustration. I have to tell my story,
right.
because my story is similar to that of 750,000 of us.
And
you know?
See, this is why I want to connect, because you had to tell your story within the church.
Right.
And it was just your story as an individual. And you dealt with the repercussions of it.
Mm-hmm.
You were actually kicked out of the church.
Right.
That you were part of family, in a sense. Now you're talking about a country.
Right.
That you have... You may have the opportunity not only to get kicked out of church, but to get kicked out of the country.
Right.
So it's almost the same, like, passion, but you don't take option one, just be quiet and sit and submit to it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't take option two, you know, just do whatever you want to do, but you decide, I'm going to fight for the injustice again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because, you know, in my case, you know, hearing these comments about, you know, certain people are, you know, rapists and criminals,
right.
and it's all they are. I'm like, no, like, I am not
a rapist.
I'm not
a criminal. Yeah.
I am not any of that.
Yeah.
And those friends of mine are not any of that either.
Right.
So how can you say that, you know?
Yeah.
It just felt so unjust to be basically branded as...
By the color of your skin.
By the color of my skin.
Your paper.
And the whole documentation.
Issue,
right? Even though, again, we, under DACA, we're legally,
right.
you know, getting work and education.
Right.
So it's like, but we're still getting criticized, you know.
Yeah.
And this is not just by anybody. It's by the, you know, it was by the presidential candidates.
Yeah.
I mean, what does that say about America and American values?
Right.
Right? So... America is supposed to be the greatest country in the world.
Well, my parents were immigrants.
Yeah.
And I'm the first in my family to be born in the United States. So I believe in it. I think history says the United States are full of immigrants, you know, with the exception of the Native Indians, which they got shafted years ago. But now, let me ask kind of a closing question. You said Jesus is your hero.
Yeah.
And obviously he fought for the unjust. And people in the Jewish people thought he was going to establish his kingdom here on earth. And he was going to just move all the Roman oppression away and just build this incredible brute force. But Jesus doesn't do it that way. He reaches out to the ones that don't have voices. He reaches out to the homeless, the hungry.
Yeah.
And so how do you connect your plight, your direction you're going with Jesus as your hero? How do you connect that?
Well, it's very simple. Like anything that I do, whether it's work, whether it's this issues, political issues, there is not one day that I don't go to sleep without praying, but I also, every single thing that I do, I base it on what would somebody like him do, right?
Yeah. What would Jesus do?
What would Jesus do?
Yeah.
Right? So I'm sure he wouldn't be happy that people like us who've followed the rules
right.
that the government has imposed
yeah.
on us, you know, all of a sudden have to suffer.
Right.
Because somebody just woke up and said, you know what?
Yeah.
Forget it. You know, it's like, no. So... For me, everything that I do is based on what he would do. What would he do?
Yeah.
Based on like the, you know, compassion and love and
right.
and caring for one another, right? And we're all human beings. Like,
right.
you know, it's pains when people when people harm other people, when people feel more powerful than other people,
right.
when a human says to another human, you're worthless,
right.
or you're property,
mm.
or you're nothing to me,
right.
I think that's the worst thing that somebody can tell another person.
Oh, you're devaluing them
yes.
as a person.
The moment somebody loses, the moment somebody sees another human being as less than a human being,
mm-hmm.
I think that's incredibly dangerous
right.
because history has showed us that a lot of things, you know, can go wrong.
Right.
And I think that we shouldn't do that.
And it's not just the undocumented. It's the Muslims.
Yes.
It's the African-Americans
uh-huh.
that are really being suppressed
yeah.
tremendously
yeah.
under what's going on.
So, and one thing that just reminds me is last year, I had an opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. And it was really interesting because I went with a group of students from UCLA.
Right.
And we made a couple of stops. So we made a stop in this restaurant.
Mm.
It's a hidden gem,
yeah.
a little old restaurant, small. And we went there to have dinner.
Mm.
Everybody was like, what are we doing in this little restaurant? Look at all these beautiful, nice, modern buildings around. Why
right.
are we going to that little restaurant?
Yeah.
So we end up going to a little restaurant. We start, you know, eating like our, you know, our chicken and our gravy and our mashed potatoes, right? And then we're sitting there, and then my godfather, who's a professor at UCLA, he says, there's a reason we brought you guys here.
Mm.
And we're like, okay. And he's like, we brought you here because this is where Martin Luther King sat and organized the Million Man March
oh,
in
wow.
Washington. This is the restaurant that he would come to almost every day with his people.
Mm.
And this is where history was made.
Right.
So we were like, oh, wow. So we're sitting there.
Yeah.
And it was amazing because, you know, I'm sitting there where Martin Luther King sat there to eat lunch every day. And so I took pictures and whatever. But and then you see the walls and there's full. I mean, there's pictures from all over, you know, people from all over the world.
Right.
And that was interesting to me to be there because you read of history in the books.
Right.
You see pictures in magazines. You see pictures and you see footage of old news, you know.
Mm.
But to be in the same place where somebody has been who's done so much for the world
oh,
is,
yeah.
is priceless.
Right.
So we do that. And then we eventually go to the Lincoln Memorial. And I'm standing there. I can't believe, you know, I'm standing right in front of
it's beautiful.
Lincoln, right?
Yeah,
it's like amazing.
Yeah.
And I had these moments of just moments to myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, no,
yeah.
what are you doing? Because it's a podcast. You're getting emotional. So, meaning it's, you're totally, now you're getting me emotional. You're totally passionate about this. So, you're sitting in front of, this is who you are, Vince. This is who you're becoming. This is where it gets powerful. So, you're sitting in front of the Lincoln Memorial. Then what?
I'm standing there, and I'm like, wow, it's amazing, though. Just to be there, to know the history, and to try to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I'm standing there, and I can't believe it, because you see it in a penny. And you think, oh, this is just a penny. You
right.
know, I mean, you'll see it in the news.
Right.
But to be standing there, it really makes you think about just life and values
mm-hmm.
and stuff. And then, so that happened. And then I turned around and I take a few steps. And then I'm basically standing in the same spot where Martin Luther King gave his I Have a Dream speech.
Right.
So to be there, I stood there and I looked out, you know, and to see the same space where, you know, Luther King stood and he saw a million people in front of him hear his words, to me was like very powerful.
Right.
So it really touched me.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened. And then the next morning was interesting because we get ready to go to this conference because we had to present some information and I was there to support, you know, to be part of it. So we wake up, we go. And I didn't even know our hotel room was basically three blocks away from the White House.
Mm-hmm.
So then we we go and, you know, we check in. When I first, you know, as I'm approaching there, we're walking there, and I see the White House. It just, it's stunning because it's like this house on a hill. You know, it's like you just look at it and you're kind of mesmerized. You're like, wow, this is pretty interesting. You know, you think of it, you see it, but you know, when being you around it, it's totally different. And so we had a chance to go inside. There's some. There's some side buildings that they do a lot of stuff. So we were, entering on the side building, and they did a lot of checks, blah, blah, blah. And then they presented, these students presented information about the contributions of immigrants, you know. And these are, the people in the room are like, these are Obama staff people.
Right.
So you have her lead attorney for immigration. You have a financial people. Mm. You have community groups. And you have students with their research info.
Right.
So it was a pretty interesting experience to be there and to shake hands with people that have so much influence in the world, right?
Absolutely.
And so I had a chance to be and see a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But again, those images of being there and seeing, the Lincoln Monument and just being where these leaders made history is very powerful because they suffered oppression, they suffered a lot of abuse and hate during their time.
Yeah.
And, you know, me going through what DACA people are going through is no different.
Well, it's interesting that you also mentioned Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King, who both their life ended by assassination.
Yeah.
And so and Jesus, in a sense, death on the cross. So all three of your heroes, that you're mentioning, have suffered tremendously, but made a huge impact in our world and today. And I think a lot of us, that we have the difference between idealism and convictions. And idealism, we think we have convictions until our life is challenged.
Oh, yeah.
And then we go, okay, I'm not going to stand for that because I have to go through suffering. And what I'm learning from this conversation with you is when you stand up for what is right, when you stand up for the unjust, when you stand up for people that don't have voices, you're not going to be embraced and hugged and say, hey, we love you, thank you, but you will go through persecution.
Yeah.
And the Bible is clear about that. When you follow Jesus, and I believe that you're following Jesus, with this direction. So the last question is this. Where do you want to be in a couple of years? What is your prayer? Do you say, you know what? This is where I want to be in a couple of years from now, or 3 years from now. Where do you see yourself?
Well, I hope, that once our situation is resolved, that I continue to work, that I have a good job, that I can provide for a family, that I can, enjoy, just the small things, going to the movies without having to worry about anything, driving without worrying about anything, the small things. I think when there's so much hate and stuff going on in the world, the smallest things are, I think, the more valuable ones, because to me it's not about money and other things, it's really about just being happy. And I always go back to even the Constitution, right? The pursuit of love and happiness,
right?
Because that's really what it is. I just want to be able to work, to study, to finish doing all these things that I'm doing, so I'm excited about the future. I'm excited about it. And just like everybody else that ever set foot in the U.S. for the first time, this is America, and I really believe in it, I forever will.
Okay. Yeah. And hopefully it'll be a great new year. This is our last podcast of the year. So let me be the first one to wish everyone who's listening to the podcast a happy new year, have a safe new year. Remember that this New Year's Day, we're going to have one service, and that is 10 o'clock in the morning. We're not going to have a Christmas Eve service. Vince, you're part of the 10:45 service usually, right?
10:45, 9.
Whenever you get there. And so Vince is a great guy to know. So if you come to our church at the 9 or 10:45 and you see Vince, tell him what the podcast meant to you. And thank you, Vince, for being part of that. And remember, guys, Happy New Year again. And remember, every day is a gift from God. Use it wisely. God bless you, and I'll see you next year.
How do you feel about it? That's good.